I guess as most of you are aware, Stephen and family are kind of landlocked or waterlocked or however you want to look at it in their home in Kingdom Heights. And hopefully they'll be able to get out soon. And again, many others that have issues, particularly Barbara and Dan. We're continuing our study of the book of Judges, and we're working on our outline that Stephen has laid out. I believe that Ronnie took us through kind of the first three boxes or so here. But just to kind of kick things off, what's kind of our critical key event that kind of kicks off this whole period of the Judges?
Death of Joshua.
Death of Joshua. Who was Joshua? Okay. So did he just appear when Moses died? What was his role? I mean, he was one of Moses' right-hand people. He was there from the time Moses went on Mount Sinai all the way through. And what other role did Joshua serve that's important? He's one of the 12 spies. And what was unique about his and one other person's report from that spying of the land of Canaan? Men of faith. And who was the other man?
Caleb.
Okay. And basically, because of that, they wandered for 40 years. And those who were above the age of around 21 never made it into the land of Canaan. They basically died. So we have their children now getting to conquer the land. Joshua has gone through a lot of the clearing out of the land. And as we've said, now we've got the death of Joshua, and we begin kind of a new era. What was unique about the time that Joshua led the people? They conquered the land, but go ahead. Yeah, they formed some alliances with some people that tricked them, and we're going to see that pattern continuing. But in general, what were the people's attitude toward God during the time that Joshua was leading?
Well, those people had wandered the wilderness and basically grew up in the wilderness. They had followed Moses and Joshua through the wilderness and watched the parents perish in the wilderness. They understood how powerful God was, and therefore, having that firsthand understanding, they were more apt to follow him. Now, that doesn't mean that they were perfect and they follow everything he said, because every once in a while somebody make a dumb decision, keep a piece of silver or some treasures they weren't supposed to, and get the whole bunch in trouble. Mm-hmm.
Elvis?
The nation was successful in its endeavors with Joshua's leadership. He was a powerful leader that exuded confidence and achieved the knowledge through God's revelation. The nation thrived and it accomplished much in serving its purpose. And then that sort of changed with the beginning of this book.
Was he just a leader? Was he a king? Was he a ruler? What was he? They struggled with their faith when they faced something a little bit difficult or a challenge. They just didn't seek God's direction or accept the fact that God was going to help them go through it. I mean, it's always interesting to me, why Joshua, and obviously it speaks to his character, his humility, that he didn't see himself as a ruler. He didn't set himself up as a king. He didn't set up his sons to follow after him. You know, he did what God directed him to do. A very, very faithful man. I think it's a lesson for us.
Oh, absolutely.
I think their time in the wilderness was a training mission, so to speak. Their time of conquering the land, they were being tested, very much like our lives and the things we have to go through in trying to rid our lives of sin, rid our lives of the temptations that we have, because it's a battle, it's a fight. Michael? I think again, he was a man who followed after God. He did what God wanted him to do. He did not have the kind of the ego to try to see all the trappings that we saw happen to the first king and the second king and on and on. Yes.
All the time. His whole life, once he crossed the Jordan River, he was like a general fighting a world war.
Yeah, field general. Very much so. Very much so.
And you can't be a king in that situation. Yeah. Very easily.
Coming back to Judges here, we've laid some good foundation for the discussion, particularly for those who may not have been involved in the class before. But as Louise laid out, the big problem was they didn't drive out the people of the land. I mean, God instructed them to do it partway, move them to the side. What did he say? Annihilate them, which is, you know, it's a hard concept.
Until our society today, they call that genocide, and they cannot wrap their head around it. And society today is just like the Israelites, where they go into lands and they got that thorn in their side forever.
Yep. So in these first chapters, who were the thorns in the side that we're going to see coming up again and again through this process? Who were some of the key peoples?
The Philistines.
Canaanites.
Perizzites.
The Ammonites. I mean, all of these people were going to be a thorn in their flesh. In what way? Our ways. So there was the point of view of who owned the land and the battles that went on to try to gain control.
They influenced the Israelites to worship their false gods.
Okay. And what were those false gods? Baals? Ashtaroths? Okay. What were these gods, just in general? We're not going to go into a deep study of them. I mean, it was basically things to help them with their crops, you know, productivity, all of the things, you know, to make sure that things went well. They trusted in them, you know. And again, these people, the Israelites, became a part and basically lived in the area with them. And as we move to chapter 3, verse 7, in this third section here, the people are beginning to worship Baal and the Ashtaroth, okay? And we begin to see the cycle that we have in the book of Judges. Can somebody tell me what the cycle is?
When they started worshiping false gods, then God would
It was just a cycle, just a do loop.
And it was about a 40-year cycle.
Well, some of them varied, but yeah, in a lot of the cases, it would last for a while. But again, we see where you have a leader involved, someone like Joshua and like some of these judges, were ones that kind of set the pattern for the people and set up what they were going to do. So who is our first character in this chapter 3, beginning in verse 7 area? Who's our first judge? Othniel. Okay, what do we know about him? Okay, so he comes from good stock. Caleb being, again, one of the two. Okay, how did he get to do that? Yep. Basically, Caleb set the requirement. Here's the reward, and basically he received that. Who was the peoples that took them captive? The Mesopotamians. Okay, Mesopotamians people. Basically from the east. How long were they taken captive?
8 years.
About 8 years. Basically in a tribute situation, slavery, so to speak, working for them, paying tribute. And then Othniel was able to do what for them? And again, after they basically were able to break free, 40 years, they have peace. 40 years they have peace and basically serve the Lord. And then what happens?
They did evil inside the Lord again.
Back to those idols again.
Here comes Eglon.
All right. Eglon is from what group of people? The Moabites. Okay, another people that were a thorn in the flesh to the children of Israel. What do you know about Eglon? He was very, very fat. And who was the judge who took them away from Eglon? Ehud. And what did he do it with? All right, how long was it?
A cubit.
And how did he get opportunity to kill Eglon? I have a message from God for you. Got his attention. So did he do it out in public?
No. He went upstairs and just tried to change right into his man's house.
Yep. And basically there he, as he told him the secret, he slipped the knife in him. And it was not a pretty sight. I won't go into the gore, but it was a pretty gory sight. And what happened to Eglon? He died. A gruesome death. Yes, very painful. And what did Ehud do as he left? The stories are so interesting to me. He locked the door. So what did Eglon's servants think? Yep. So how much rest comes with the time of Ehud? 80? I thought I wrote 8. Is it 80?
No, verse 30 says
80. Okay, I wrote down. I must not have finished writing my numbers. I left my zero off. All right. And who is our next judge? Shamgar. Yes. No, go ahead. Go ahead. Different areas of the land. So I guess we should say it's the next one mentioned, to be accurate. To be accurate. And again, I missed that session, so thanks for providing that info. What's unique about Shamgar? Now we have the Philistines coming on the scene. Some of the coastal people there of the land of Canaan. And what's an ox goad?
It's basically a walking stick with a point on the end of it where you walk behind a cow or an ox, and when you need to go somewhere, you poke him in the rumpus, and the point tends to get him to go. If that doesn't work, you hit their foot. We're between their cloven hoof, and that makes them move as well. The current day ox goad is basically, you'll see them in show rings with show calves. Basically what it is, same thing.
Sharp stick.
Sharp stick with a point.
And interesting to be such a weapon of choice with the Philistines. Obviously the weaponry is not very... not much technology to it. Basic weapons. Yep. Yep. I mean, we're gonna see Samson, who uses something even more creative than an ox goad. Yep.
Well, I saw something historically here recently that alluded to the fact that the Israelites had not discovered how to mine and make metal swords yet. That was one of the things that they were struggling with whenever we read the Bible about a valley that when they tried to go into and they had chariots. From the chariots, and they couldn't fight against that because the technology was more than what they possessed. I didn't realize that the Israelites at this point in my whole life were not. I'd always assumed that metal had been there. Well, evidently, at this period in time, the Israelites don't have metal making skills just yet.
Actually, they have bronze making skills. Iron swords.
So what does that lead the children of Israel to do when going up against formidable armies with iron? Worry first, but what do they ultimately have to do?
Trust God,
which is what he wanted them to do from the very beginning. Because he had done what about taking the land and clearing it out? Was it a promise to them? Now, was it a contingent promise? Yes. Exactly. So there was a contingency. And the problem was they didn't do what they were supposed to do. Yeah. Well, they didn't need it. I mean, they conquered Jericho with what?
A shout.
Trumpets and a shout. And we're going to see, you know, another battle here coming up with similar items to win. And again, it's God leading them, God's power, again, showing them that He's in control. Anything else you want to add to the points in 3:7? Something we've missed. All right, let's go on to chapter 4. What does our story in chapter 4 begin with? All right, death of Ehud, and what naturally follows? Yep. Sin in the sight of the Lord. And who takes them over? Yep. Jabin and the Canaanites. For how long? 20 years. And again, they want a champion, someone to lead them. And who's their new leader? Who's their new judge?
Deborah.
Okay. So is she a field general? Is she driving the war? What did she do? She was a prophetess. But who did she call on?
Barak.
All right, who was Barak? He was, in essence, a leader who could call together their army and could try to take over things. And what message did Deborah give Barak? What did she tell him to do, and what did she tell him would happen? Okay, so basically she's a leader. She is guiding him what he needs to do, giving him the message of God of what he needs to do. And what's his response? Why? Obviously he didn't have the faith to do it himself. Evidently he doesn't believe it. And basically Deborah assigns a consequence if she goes along. And what was the consequence for Barak? Into the hand of a woman. And how should Barak react to that?
Not good back in this day and age.
Okay. Michael?
The impressive part, he said, okay, let's go. Which is, it interested me when I read that if you look at it coming from an outside perspective, you know, try not to read what we know into what we've always thought about the stories, he essentially is asking the prophet of God to deal with him in the battle, which maybe not a bad idea, although it does depend on history a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. All right. So is Sisera well armed?
Yeah, they got chariots and swords. Iron swords.
Okay. Is God with Barak and the army?
Yeah, he is actually.
What happened to Sisera's army? Okay, they conquered them. They fled. They took them on. Who else fled?
Sisera.
Where did he end up? Another interesting story. How he was delivered into the hand of a woman. Jael.
There's supposed to be peace between
Yep. So he thought he had a safe place to hide, and he asked Jael to do what? Watch the door. Don't tell anybody I'm here. And by the way, I'm what? I'm thirsty. And what'd she give him?
Milk.
Now, he's been fighting. He's exhausted. What do you think the milk did to him? Yep. Giving her opportunity to do what gruesome thing? I mean, all the way through his head. Again.
And sometimes, you know, we talk about this in class sometimes. Sometimes I don't think we understand what they're talking about there. Back then, a tent peg was a sharpened stick, obviously, that came to a point. But the thing was like, at one end, was like an inch and a half around. And this is not a little bitty piece of wood. This is a big chunk of wood. And you've got to drive it pretty hard. It's not sharpened to a sharp point. It's a pretty dull point, I'm sure. So you're talking about something 3/8 to 1/2 inch at the very pointed end, all up to 1.5 inches, 1.75 inches at the other end where it's been pounded by a maul.
You think God had a hand in what happened to Sisera?
Yeah. She was obviously pretty strong when she did that.
She had to have some kind of a mace or a mallet of some sort that she was pounding that through. Well, temple is, you know, one of the most sensitive spots on the head for a hit. Elvis? Kind of anticlimactic. But again, to me, it's just amazing God thinking up these things. I mean, his mind is so far beyond mine and the lessons he's trying to teach them. I mean, ultimately, what did he want to teach Barak?
Humility.
Humility and what?
Trust.
Trust in God. Trust in God. I mean, we stop here for just a moment, just make kind of a little excursion, and try to make application. How does the cycle of these children of Israel during the time of Judges, how does it compare to our lives? If we're honest. I mean, we go through all kinds of cycles. And to me, we see the importance of individuals standing up and being leaders. I see the importance of this body we have here and how we're organized to help keep us together and doing what we need to do, holding us accountable. But again, I too look in my life and the challenges and the things I've faced and the times I've fallen. It's a cycle. And when things get easy, that's when you tend to lose focus and lose sight on what you need to do. And the irony of life for me is we all want a smooth path. But what's the best thing for us to stay walking in the light for God? Challenges. They force us to make decisions. They force us to look for help. Other comments? Am I on target? Am I missing something? Elvis?
I think the cycles that we're referring to here, you know, these seven cycles, also points to the rejection of Christ. I think it's very evident that, you know, they were under Roman captivity. They wanted someone to throw off the Romans. And you can see how it's sort of embedded in their history and their DNA about what they think freedom is, right? Once we're oppressed, we call on God, get rid of our oppressors, and then go back to our ways.
Mm-hmm.
And, you can really see why Christ is being rejected.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a, you know, Isaiah goes to Isaiah 53, but you know, you look at the judgments, it really points towards the rejection of Christ as well.
Mm-hmm. Look at, and again, I'm going to a bigger picture now. looking at our country's society from the time of the founding fathers till today, what's the vast change in their lifestyle between then and now? You know, the whole period through a lot of the 1700s, 1800s, as the West is being explored, I mean, it's just survival. I mean, you're focused on just the necessities of life.
Well, yeah, but when the pilgrims came here as Puritans to follow God, their whole purpose was to follow the Lord.
Yep. I mean, you didn't have much choice but to face the challenges of just finding something to eat or having roof over your head, clothes. Today, what's our main focus? Society. Not just, I'm talking about us in this room, but society. Accumulation, getting ahead, more spare time.
Self.
Yeah.
How many people do you know in this society today actually do what you said just a second ago? Go out and gather, raise, get their own food from the raw sources. People get real proud of themselves when they grow one or two plants, and they are not sustaining themselves by themselves. There's very few people who do that.
Well,
that's a tough job.
You have a lot of people that have no clue where their food sources are,
right,
and what it takes to get it to the market. And again, that's, to me, we lose sight on purpose, which the early people had a purpose. Now the purpose is well stated, is self, which is really no purpose at all.
Back in the day, if you will, it appears that in God we trust meant a lot. Obviously it did. Nowadays, in self we trust. And we get in a real bind, get ourselves in a bind, if we trust in ourselves and leave God out of the picture. And that's what we're doing now. Mm-hmm.
And we live in a society that we don't want to offend anybody. And that's just even by our expression of our words. You know, the founding fathers, and again, I don't try to be political, but just looking at the concepts, people talking about the gospel. You know, today that's viewed what? Almost as hate speech. Because you're criticizing somebody else who doesn't believe the way you do. You know, and freedom of religion has become freedom from religion. And it's a sad state. Things, I think, are going to get worse before they get better, but we'll see. So much for the politics aside. Other comments, thoughts? Okay. How do we end chapter 5 with Deborah?
So the man had rest for 4 years.
Okay. But what do we have? What's that whole chapter 5 about?
There's
a song of kind of praise to God, praise to her as leading them to follow God, all her exploits, all the things that happen, including jails. Activity with Cicero. All right, let's look at 6:1. How do we start chapter 6? Cycle begins again. All right, and who's the next captor? The Midianites. Okay. And for how long? 7 years. Who's the next judge? Gideon. Very interesting character. Interesting how he is in the beginning and is in the later part of his life. In order to trust the angel from the God, what did he ask for? He asked for a sign in order to go and to do what he was supposed to do. And what was the instruction of the angel? Seems like a test to me. Go do what? Whose altar of Baal was it? His father's. So basically, this is kind of a test, so to speak, that if he's willing to do what God has him to do, to go tear it down, does he do it? When does he do it? He did it at night. Okay? And then the next day or next days, it's discovered. And they try to figure out who it is that did it, and do they know? That word will get around. So these men who were upset about it being torn down went to who? Who is? They went to Gideon's father. And what did Gideon's father say? They wanted Gideon's father to take care of him, to punish him for what he'd done, because they wanted to put him to death. But what did Gideon's father say? This is a real God. Let the real God take care of it. You know, if he has power, who else should want to protect it? Not me. We'll let the God do it. Kind of sounds like a little bit of Elijah. Okay. Now he's being asked to lead the men to try to break off from the Midianites. And does he ask for another sign? Yeah. He asked it two ways. The first way was what? He had the wool on the threshing floor, and the first time the wool was to be what? The dew was on the wool and not on the ground. And then he got to do it all over, and it was what? Just the opposite. Okay. And we're going to see the interesting story, we're about out of time, of how God tries to make sure that his people trust in him in trying to take these battles and basically cutting down the number of men that they took and how they did that. But we'll take that up next Wednesday. Appreciate your comments and participation.